Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Mohammed Marandi. Mohammed is Associate Professor at the University of Tehran. He chairs the North American Studies Department. He is very well-versed in what's going on in the region, and he's been on this program before. He has marvelous insights, and I wanted to bring him back. I hope I'll do it again. Hope he's able to come back again so we can continue talking about the absolute turmoil in the region. And it may be going on in the region, but its genesis comes from some miles to the east of where I live in the Middle West. Just awful. The headquarters in Washington causes so much grief. Mohammed, I welcome you to the program.
Mohammed? Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Oh, can you hear me okay? Mohammed?
I can hear you very well.
Okay.
Yes, I can hear you very well.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. You're there. I look at things from afar, and I write about them all the time. I've been writing near daily articles on Syria. This morning I'm drafting and pretty well along in an article about the new sanctions on Iran, and I've talked about them a number of times before. I addressed it from an international law point of view, which I've done a little bit before, but I got a lot more detail in this article, so that really is the focus of what I'm writing about. But let's talk about both countries and what's going on and the turmoil that you see. Both countries,
well,
I mean Syria and Iran.
You mean Syria, right?
Yeah.
Well, the Iranians believe that what is going on in Syria is basically an attempt by Western powers, along with Arab dictatorships like Saudi Arabia and Qatar, to overthrow the Syrian government. And that basically what they're trying to do is to wreck any chance of peace negotiations between the government and those who seek reform. In other words, an internal and nonviolent opposition. So, for example, when the Annan plan was announced, immediately afterwards, the Saudis and the Qataris called for arms to be sent to the opposition, and they decided to do so themselves. And the United States and the European Union, they backed the Saudis and the Qataris. So basically, they themselves wrecked the Annan plan. They did not want the Annan plan to work. And
can
so you
I,
have
can
the
I
violence
add,
that
can
you
I
see
add
today.
One thing about Annan, Mohammed? I wrote about him while he was still Secretary General in 10 years in that office, head of the UN. He didn't do one single thing to stop the imperial wars that went on across the decade. There was no question in my mind, Mohammed, why he was chosen to come up with this so-called peace plan that was just cover, in my mind, to let this lawlessness and killing and slaughter and destruction continue. And he's a smooth guy. He says one thing, but I swear his policies are completely different. And the same thing with Ban Ki-moon. You know, they point fingers the wrong way. They blame Assad for these death squads running around the country murdering people. It just obsesses me. But let me let you continue.
Well, I think many people in the region would agree completely with what you say. Annan was installed by the United States after the decline collapse of the Soviet Union. During those years, the United States really was the sole superpower. So they had special rights and privileges, and one of them was choosing the Secretary General. And the current Secretary General is a continuation of Annan, yet even worse. Although I think in future the United States will not have, the U.S. government will not have the ability to run the U.N. as it does now. But that's another story. But in any case, even Anand, who is very biased towards the West and who is very firmly in the U.S. camp, even his plan is something that is completely unacceptable to the United States, because at the end of the day, the Americans recognize that the Syrian president has a lot of local support. In a meeting between the Iranian foreign minister and the Turkish foreign minister 8-9 months ago, the Turkish foreign minister basically said that we recognize that Assad still has popular support in the country, and that if there were elections, he would be elected as president. And that is what the United States, the Turks, and Saudi Arabia fear. They fear that if reforms are carried out, Assad would be elected. And therefore, they are adamant that this the violence in Syria would escalate. So contrary to the impression that is given by CNN and other Western media outlets, as well as media outlets owned by Arab dictatorships, the bloodshed, most of the Western regimes, the Turkish regime and the Saudis are responsible for most of the bloodshed. That does not mean that the Syrian government is a democratic and a government that is abides by democratic ideals. There are many flaws in the Syrian regime, but the point is that, and this was the Iranian position, that Assad, even according to Western polls, a poll carried out, for example, by the BBC, and funded by Qatar, ironically, and which is on the BBC website, Doha Debate, the poll itself showed that Assad is popular in this country. The Iranians were saying, give Assad time to carry out reforms. And the opposition inside Syria, because there are two trends within the opposition. One is the militant and Western and Saudi-backed opposition, and the other is the opposition at home. Inside Syria, there's an opposition that is against foreign intervention, it's against violence, but it's also calling for reforms, and many of them were people who were in prison in Syria over the past few years, and they are far more credible than the Western-backed opponents. In fact, these people right now are calling for an end to the violence and for negotiations with the government. Yet since the West and the Saudis have hijacked the opposition, they basically have no voice in the media or anywhere else.
They sure don't. And absolutely, the regional countries, and I've certainly written about them, the Saudis, the Qataris, the Jordanians, I'm convinced that Israel is very much involved in this. They keep their head down, but I think you know that Israeli weapons show up in Syria every now and then. I'm sure there's a lot of them around, and of course Israel borders on Syria. The other Gulf states are involved, but the strings are pulled in the West and mainly in Washington. And for at least the last decade or longer, Mohammed, Washington planned regime change in Syria, not because of the kind of government that Syria has. That's never the issue with Washington. The issue was either pro-Western or not pro-Western. So independent governments like Syria and Iraq under Saddam and Afghanistan and Libya under Gaddafi and Iran, independent governments that are not in the pro-Western camp. In other words, Washington gives the orders and they salute and obey. If they don't go along with that kind of an arrangement, then they get targeted for regime change to get pro-Western people in, ideally a puppet regime. And this is the scheme. And Washington will go about this any way they have to, even if they have to go to war. And that's what really concerns me about Syria. And the one thing on that right now is there's an election coming up in America in a few months, so the political issue is very much in play. I'm not sure Obama wants another full-scale war in his hands, especially with a country like Syria ahead of the election, but I worry most what's coming post-election, which is the first Tuesday in November.
Well, I agree with you in the sense that the United States has been supporting dictatorships throughout the region and beyond. And there's no doubt that the situation in Syria has nothing to do with democracy and freedom, because the United States is allied with Saudi Arabia and Qatar and other dictatorships in order to overthrow Assad. And we all know that Saudi Arabia is probably the most reactionary regime in the world, and it is completely despotic. A royal family owns the country. The country is even named after the Saudi family. So it is ridiculous to say that this has anything to do with freedom and democracy. On the other hand, the United States has been opposed to every single, and the Europeans have been opposed to every single revolution that has taken place in the Arab world so far. In Tunisia, they supported the dictator. In Egypt, they supported Mubarak until he was about to fall. And even now, they are helping the army and funding the army to prevent the democracy and freedom and the elected president from gaining real power. In Yemen, they've stalled the election. In Bahrain, the U.S. Fifth Fleet is based there, and the dictator there is killing his citizens and oppressing the local population. And the United States does not. And the Saudis have occupied the country in Bahrain, yet the United States has no complaint. In fact, Obama, in a statement, basically legitimized, and so did Clinton, legitimized the Saudi occupation of Bahrain. So this is the real state of affairs of U.S. foreign policy. In Syria, there's also one thing I should add, and you were speaking about some of the mass murders and atrocities that were carried out. As soon as an atrocity is carried out in Syria, over the last year and a half, this is how it was. The Western media would immediately blame pro-government militias or the army and so on. But it's always been interesting that on many occasions, these atrocities were carried out the day before a UN vote or a Security Council meeting. A pattern emerged. Every time there was to be a UN Security Council meeting, the night before you'd have a huge, or the day before you'd have a huge atrocity carried out. And many of my friends and colleagues believe that the Syrian opposition was carrying this out to put pressure on the regime, and the Western media basically whitewashed their actions because it followed. It was suitable to their commentary and the position that they were taking.
Oh, the timing is always so important. Most people in America, Mohammed, do not connect the dots. It's astonishing. I mean, the fact that U.S. People, for the most part, simply don't get it or don't take the trouble to get it or are too focused on other things to get it, whatever the reasons are, some things that seem so obvious, you know, when the same pattern keeps repeating over and over and over again, you would think that eventually people would catch on, people have been around long enough, but you can keep fooling Americans again and again and again and again. So, anybody who is an adult remembers the WMDs in Iraq and yellow cake uranium and aluminum tubes and all that phony stuff. And now we have the same thing cropping up in Syria, chemical weapons. They'll pull whatever else they want to pull. Of course, ignored is Israel's tremendous stockpile, probably the largest in the region by far, chemical, biological, and of course nuclear. But there's never a whisper about this in the Western press, especially in America. And people in the U.S., with every opportunity to know what's going on with a small amount of effort, anybody with a computer, if they spend even 15 minutes a day, they could know enough about what's going on to say, I'm not going to take this anymore. And their own welfare is being harmed because the resources of America go to wage these imperial wars. Our social benefits are cut at home. Other huge amounts are given in corporate subsidies and banker bailouts and so on. And Obama has the audacity to say, we're broke. We're broke. Shared sacrifice. Those are quotes. We're broke and she had sacrificed. What she had sacrificed means ordinary people sacrifice so the rich folks in the country can share, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And it doesn't matter, Mohammed, whether Obama is reelected or whether Romney is elected. The beat goes on. The same stuff goes on. And I really fear that they have another war in their minds. And, I mean, Syria, it could be an absolute powder keg if there's a war there, aside from the strength of the Syrian military. I mean, you blow up Libya, it's a small country. Look at the turmoil going on there now. Syria is a bigger country. My goodness gracious. I mean, whatever the trouble is in Libya, maybe you multiply that to so many times more in Syria. And if Iran is ever attacked, then that would be a lot bigger than the other two combined. And we have people in America who don't think about these things. I'm not a military strategist, Mohammed, but some of this stuff seems elementary to me. The risk is so great. I don't know what would happen, but the risk is so great. Why would anybody want to take a chance and do this? And they might end up causing themselves more harm than good by some of this. America loves instability and violence and so on, but up to a point, you cross a point and it gets too extreme and it comes back and bites them. You know, the old blowback thing. And literally, maybe they've reached the point where you go at Syria with a full-scale war, NATO bombing and so on, and you've crossed the Rubicon and you've let, you've cracked open Pandora's box and there's all hell to pay because of this. But yet the rhetoric is so hostile that I really fear post-election this is coming.
Well, you know, one of the things that you pointed out in Syria is of course the threat of war. But I think that even now one has to look and see what the United States has actually done in Syria. The United States, which is illegally bombing many countries and carrying out drone attacks and killing thousands of people in the name of waging war against Al-Qaeda and Al-Qaeda-like groups, they are helping groups in Syria to grow that are Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda-like. Now there are thousands of such people fighting in Syria. And the Saudis and the Qatari regime, they're funding them to the hilt. And the United States and the Western media is closing their eyes to this reality. And this is exactly what happened in Afghanistan. But the difference now is this is right beside the Mediterranean. So you have a host of unstable countries like Libya, like Tunisia, like Egypt, like Yemen, which are even growing more unstable because of partially because of U.S. policy. And then you have a huge training ground called Syria where many thousands of Al-Qaeda-like people and people with Al-Qaeda-like ideologies and people from Al-Qaeda are waging war, being trained, learning warfare. They will eventually go back to their own countries. Right across the Mediterranean, of course, is Europe. In future, if you have a host of 9/11s, you shouldn't be surprised because the United States and its close friend and ally, Saudi Arabia, are basically creating a force which is far more dangerous and far more powerful than the Al-Qaeda of the previous decade. In addition to that, I think we should also take into account the fact that the United States is actually waging war against Iran. The sanctions, the embargo, the attempt by the United States to destroy the Iranian economy is something that ordinary Iranians take into consideration. They take into account the fact that Americans officially are trying to wreck the Iranian economy means that the sanctions are directed at ordinary people. The sanctions in Syria are directed at ordinary people. It's the intention is to make ordinary people suffer to cause social instability in order to overthrow the Syrian state. And the same is true in Gaza. The embargo which has been in place in Gaza with the help of the EU and the United States is intended to make Palestinians suffer so that they give up the Hamas government. And these sort of policies are what make the United States so unpopular in the region and beyond. Many Americans wonder why do they hate us? It is basically because the United States imposes embargoes on nations, tries to make people suffer, it invades other countries, and then in one country it opposes groups like Al-Qaeda, and in another country they support that very same group like in Syria. So the hypocrisy of U.S. policy is another reason why it is so unpopular. While I think many Americans are to blame for their ignorance about what is going on, I think it is also the responsibility of people like ourselves and others to help Americans access alternative websites and sources of information, because it's very difficult to access this sort of information inside the United States, because all the mainstream websites and news channels, they basically mimic one another and say the same thing. Very few people know about websites like, I don't know, moonofalabama.org or ratesforiran.com or conflictsforum.org and a host of other websites. And therefore, they can't access this sort of information readily.
That's exactly right, Mohammed. I agree with everything that you said, and there are lots of ways to wage war. I've written about waging financial wars. There's a war right here in America, Mohammed. There's a financial war on the American people where the wealth is sucked out of ordinary people and literally shoveled up to the top, to what we call the top 1%. It's really about the top 0.1%, something like that. The big money people, they get more, and ordinary people are being deprived so much. That's financial war. And financial war over time can end up being more destructive than hot wars. I mean, you literally consign people to deep poverty and deprive them of health care. And I mean, they can die slow deaths. You know, they die younger, they can't get the health care they need. There are all kinds of deprivations they have to live with, so there are lots of ways to wage war. And I agree with you that the sanctions are targeting the ordinary people of these countries, Syria and Iran, civilians. And the idea is to turn them against the government. I think it usually turns out the opposite, Mohammed. I remember, and I've written about this during World War II, the more the Nazis bombed Britain, the stronger the support was of the British people for their own government. Who on earth do they have to protect them? And I think that was true in Libya. I think it's true in Syria. Who else do the people have to protect them but the security forces of the state? And if they get defeated and they go, they know the kind of killer gangs, these death squads that are running around the country. Is that what they want to have in charge? Well, there's no question that they don't. Even the people who are, most people who oppose Assad in Syria, I absolutely believe they do not want these thugs to get a foothold in their country and start running things. Whatever they don't like about Assad, they would much rather have him than the alternative, which is absolute disaster. And this is what's going on. And again, I mean, Libya right now is Exhibit A. Iraq is Exhibit A. Look at all the car bombs that keep going off every day.
And, you know, I agree with you completely. And, you know, what is ironic is that the United States is causing the suffering of its own people, partially because of the wars that it is carrying out abroad, and partially because of the soft wars that they're carrying out. For example, of course, we all know how Iraq and Afghanistan helped to create the huge deficit, or to increase the huge deficit in the U.S. economy, and the rise of oil prices, and how all this caused ordinary Americans to suffer so much. But let's take the example of Iran. The sanctions and the embargo and the attempt to make Iranians suffer by the United States and its Western allies has caused Iran basically just to turn away from the West and to trade with China. So you see that, for example, trade with China has increased dramatically over the past few years. Or, for example, young Iranian students who wish to go abroad and study in the past, they usually choose Western countries. Right now, most Iranian students young students who want to go outside of the country, they turn to Asian countries. They go to, again, China or Malaysia or in India or, other Brazil, Africa. And so, and of course, years from now, when these young Iranians come back to Iran, when they become businessmen and women, when they become government officials, they will prefer trade and relations with the countries that they've actually studied in and been to. So you see that Iran is turning away let me put it this way, the United States and its allies have pushed Iran towards the opposition camp. So instead of actually helping Americans, they're helping the Chinese, they're helping the Indians, they're helping their own rivals, the U.S. regime. The U.S. regime is hurting its own people and helping its rivals by such foolish policies. And, of course, it angers the Iranian people. And as you pointed out, when a government is attacked, people become more supportive because they, just like, as you pointed out, the British, when the Germans were attacking Britain, the people rallied, around the British flag. It's natural. And the same is true in Iran as in all these other countries. So the United States government is only increasing pain and hurt among ordinary Americans, the 99%, or as you point out, the 99.9%, by these not misguided policies, but misguided and inhuman policies in the Middle East and beyond.
I've got a couple of things for you, Mohammed. I've got a headline. I'll give you just a moment. But I wrote an article today about Gore Vidal, who was one of my heroes. He died on Monday. There were some marvelous quotes I included in it. And the only one I wanted to mention that's appropriate to what we're talking about was, he said, there's no way that America is going to win its Middle East wars. They made enemies out of 1 billion Muslims. I thought that was a great quote. It's just a round number, a billion. You know, you make enemies out of everybody. How on earth can you prevail? But here's a headline for you. I just got a headline from the Financial Times, and the headline reads, Kofi Annan quits as UN envoy to Syria. And it just got a paragraph, and the last line of the paragraph says, he's going out pointing fingers the wrong way. Quote, it is clear that President Assad must leave office, unquote. Spoken like a true imperialist.
Yeah. Well, I would like to add that the United States has not only made enemies among well over 1 billion Muslims, but it's made enemies throughout the world. When I go to conferences in China, and we have discussions at, for example, Beijing University. When an American or someone comes from the United States and defends the American government position, they get very little support or applause. But when people like myself critique American foreign policy, the students and Chinese academics applaud. Or just recently, I went to a conference with a number of other Iranians in Brazil. And the academics there, the students there, they were sympathetic towards Iran rather than the United States. So I think this goes far beyond the Muslim world. I think many neocons and liberal hawks, they like to pretend as if this was a problem with Muslims. But this is basically a problem of imperialism and hegemony and injustice. And this is something that the United States government is doing throughout the world. But the problem with the Middle East is, of course, is Israel and oil. The United States wants control over oil resources, and it's doing it in a way in which ultimately I think the United States will suffer, because when eventually the people of Saudi Arabia overthrow their regime, the United States is going to be burned badly. And then also Israel, the U.S. support for apartheid in Palestine is something that is extraordinary.
Absolutely, Mohammed. I'm afraid I've got to cut you off because we're out of time. I absolutely agree with you 100%. I look forward to getting you back again. These are self-destructive policies. Israel's, America's, Britain's, France, same thing. They're declining. Asia is rising, et cetera, and so on. Mohammed, many, many thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And join us this weekend, of course, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday and Sunday, and every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.